Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, the CEO, or sometimes I call myself the Chief Encouragement Officer of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. And you're listening again to CMDA Matters, our weekly podcast, which is available on a rather long list of podcast platforms, as well as on the CMDA website, cmda.org. Well, our guest this week is Dr. Chris Lasanti, whom I met back in January as we both were in a breakout group during a webinar that was hosted by CMDA's RED, that's R-R-E-D committee, which stands for Racism, Reconciliation, Equality, and Diversity. It's a subcommittee of our Board of Trustees. Well, I got to know Dr. Lasanti just a bit and was fascinated by his array of interests, including serving as a coach for a homeschool high school national debate team. I asked him to join me on the podcast to talk about one of the topics that causes him great concern in medicine today, and that is the pitfalls of consumer medicine. Well, when we're all done, I believe that you'll have a pretty good idea why Chris is so concerned about our profession that for millennia has been held in such high esteem. So let's jump right in. Well, today on CMDA Matters, I have a guest all the way from San Antonio, Texas, Dr. Chris Lasanti. He's a diagnostic radiologist, assistant professor at the Uniformed Services University of the Health Sciences. He's actually also assistant program director for research in radiology at the famous Brooke Army Medical Center, medical director for a pregnancy care center in San Antonio. And that association is actually one of the reasons why he ended up on this podcast today. And head coach for ASEN Speech and Debate Club. And he may tell us about that briefly as we get started. But he has more than 40 peer-reviewed publications, including co-author of the book MRI, The Basics. Sounds like a book for me, Chris. His current research explores the intersection of medicine, philosophy, and theology with our current culture, culminating in several articles. And we're going to talk about one of those today that's entitled Consumer Medicine's Origins and Harms. He served our country in the U.S. Air Force, is retired at the rank of colonel. He served for more than 24 years in our military. Thank you for that service, Dr. Lasanti. And married to Claire, his wife of 26 years, and they are home educators of their four children, including, as he gets started, he is a debate coach and travels with his kids and a debate team all over the place, having them compete in debate. So welcome, Coach and Dr. Lasanti today to CMDA Matters.
Thank you, Mike. It's really a pleasure and honor to be here on CMDA Matters. Thank you for inviting me.
Wow. How big is this debate team? That's what I want to know. I want to know how many kids and what levels, and is there a national championship or anything like that?
Oh, there certainly is. We probably have about 25 kids in our club, and they range in age from 12 to 18. I actually coach the Lincoln-Douglas values debate and parliamentary debate. And so that's more for the more advanced debaters. And so we have about four kids in our Lincoln-Douglas and about six to eight in our parliamentary debate. But we do travel. We usually travel in the region, usually in Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas. But there's in our league, STOA, it goes from coast to coast, basically. We have our national championships every year. This year, it actually happens to be up in Dallas at Dallas Baptist University. And I'll be working the tabulation section up there. And then last year, one of my Lincoln-Douglas value debaters actually won second in the nation. So I was really thrilled about that. I was just cheering them on to victory and trying not to give them some black pearls, as we would say in radiology, you know?
Sign me up. I probably need to start with a very remediary class or level, whatever that is in speech and debate.
We'd call it novice debaters.
That would be this former general surgeon for sure. Well, speaking of general surgery, I remember back, I think I was a second year resident out of five, and Unfortunately, I wanted to have a reconstructive plastic surgery rotation, Dr. Lasanti, but we only had a cosmetic surgeon that was available for me to do a one-month rotation, one of the busiest cosmetic surgeons in all of Indianapolis. And so I spent a month observing, first assisting, let's just say, on a lot of breast implants. And you talk about consumer medicine. There were notes in the chart, this woman wants a B or a C or a D. And hour after hour, day after day, we were doing consumer medicine, trying to please this plastic surgeon's patients. It didn't make me feel all that great, honestly. I wish I had done a few muscle flaps, which would have come in really handy later on. But when I saw your title, I guess I was also thinking maybe this would be about advertising for drugs. Tell us basically, what is consumer medicine and how did a radiologist get into writing articles on things like this? I think this was your fourth article on a topic in this arena.
It's really my third, but nevertheless, this happened to be long enough, the last one. It probably counts for two or three probably. Sure. But when I retired from the Air Force back in 07, I decided I'd always been pro-life, but I felt really in my heart that the Lord was calling me to get out of the stands and onto the playing field, so to speak. And so I contacted a local pregnancy center where I later then became the medical director for and really revamped and helped improve their ultrasounds and really connected very, very closely with the team there. Just amazing work that all of our pro-life pregnancy centers are doing throughout the country. But then we're also part of, again, a national organization called CareNet. There's several, but CareNet. And so we went to one of their annual conferences. And so there I met Dr. Sandy Christensen, who was the medical director of CareNet. And she encouraged me to go ahead and be part of their medical advisory board, which I readily accepted. She said, hey, we need a radiologist on here because we do a lot of ultrasounds. We got a lot of OBGYNs and family practitioners. So it'd be good to kind of round out the group basically with your own expertise. So a couple of years passed by, and then several years ago, she made me aware of an AMA ethics article, which was entitled "Why Crisis Pregnancy Centers Are Legal But Unethical." Now, obviously, that struck very close to my heart because I feel that what we're doing is the Lord's work.
Correct.
You know, I mean, we're promoting life. We're doing all sorts of amazing things. We're trying to promote health, holistic healing, and things of that nature. So she sent me this proposed letter to the editor, and I said, well, that's fine, but what we really need to do is make an apologia, really, for crisis pregnancy centers. And so I went ahead and said, hey, why don't I start working on thinking this through and writing our own manuscript, basically, for it. And at first, I did one of our debate sort of approaches, which was a point-by-point refutation. What that means is you just go through whatever their points were and you say, oh, yeah, but you forgot this, or your logic is failing here, or your assumptions are delinked, or something on those lines. There's a lot of cool debate terms that we can use for that, which actually helps quite a bit when you're starting to analyze different aspects of controversial subjects and topics and things like that. Our debaters are doing that all the time. It's just really amazing. And it's poetry in motion to see those kids at work sometimes. But then I started thinking, well, what is the underlying philosophy? Why are ostensibly, you know, well-intentioned people saying what we do is unethical and really casting it in no uncertain terms, while there's obviously myself and many, many others that I know feel it's extremely ethical. And so really what I ended up coming to was asking, what then is the purpose of medicine? You know, and then the underlying differences. And I always thought, hey, I'm a radiologist. It's all about reducing diagnostic uncertainty. I tell my residents that all the time. I mean, we got to keep ourselves laser focused on our purpose. And then in a global sense, we need to do that in medicine, too. We need to focus on restoring and maintaining the health of our patients. But the thing was, is that when I came to the conclusion was that those who feel that what we are doing is unethical, who are promoting abortion and things of that nature, they don't have a solid or clear understanding of what the end or the purpose of medicine is. And so really that ended up then launching me into, you know, the whole idea of this vendor customer relationship that is now infiltrating almost like a cancer within medicine today. And so that then led me to thinking more deeply about really consumer medicine, because we introduced the concept of vendor and customer relationship as opposed to a patient-physician relationship. Mm-hmm. And it sounds pretty good. You're like, well, yeah, I kind of know what that is. But then people, and we lead our article off with this. A lot of people think, oh, consumer medicine is big pharma advertising a rheumatoid arthritis medication to my patients or a Crohn's disease medication for my patients. And although that has some influence and effects on doctors, I think what they don't really see is that is fundamentally still within the concept of trying to achieve the objective health of the patient. It's just that big pharma is trying to encourage or influence patients and their physicians to pick a particular sort of medication or means, but they're still achieving the same end. The end meaning to prevent or cure disease. As well, the locus of the diagnosis right. lies still within the physician, okay? So the physician's the one that fuses the subjective and the objective, right? And then knows their patients well enough in order to go ahead and then make a recommendation as to which medication, if any, or which therapy, if any, would be best for this particular patient in order to achieve the objective end called the health of the patient. Consumer medicine, unfortunately, does not achieve an objective health of the patient. But what it ends up then doing is it uses many of the same means that we have in medicine, the same drugs and the same injections and the same surgical techniques or very similar ones. But the locus of the diagnosis no longer lies with the doctor, but it lies exclusively now with the patient. So if a patient, in your instance, they want to look a little different, okay, that is entirely a subjective sort of thing. The physician, you know, I mean, so we can look at patients and go, that one looks objectively abnormal. And that's where reconstructive surgery comes in. And everything that's happening today with cosmetic surgery, whether it be Botox injections and the whole ilk basically ends up becoming entirely subjective. And so, and then it's achieving an end that doesn't really necessarily relate to the biologic health of the patient, but we're pursuing psychosocial goals. And therein lies the problem that we looked at in a variety of things. And then, you know, there's a variety of fallout from that when we start pursuing goals within medicine that start pandering to the psychosocial aspects of our culture. We start to reinforce some of the more difficult and problematic aspects of the culture, such as an overemphasis on the external appearance of a patient. So basically, wrinkles are no longer a sign of wisdom and respect, but it's now something to be treated as some horrible disease. And so doctors are now promoting and advertising Botox injections, for instance, to get rid of those wrinkles that now seem to be a disease somehow. But that ends up becoming very problematic in many instances, because again, we're reinforcing social pathology in right. terms now, of our views.
Now, Chris, yeah. I do want to ask, so taking you back to my residency and my experience there, I didn't have any issue with the morality of what was being done, per se. Mm-hmm. I don't think that occurred to me. But now fast forward 30 years, and now with what came of this, the consumer medicine provider services model, as someone that we respect, a previous guest of mine, Dr. Curlin, in The Way of Medicine, the provider services model, that we could have foreseen that expressive individualism that you highlight mm-hmm. in your article on consumer medicine would drive us to the point that now instead of breast implants, it's not breast reduction, you know, because of back pain. It is breast removal because mm-hmm, of gender right. transition. So there clearly are gradations in consumer medicine. And when do we cross the line of ethically wrong as a professional providing services for someone for what they're requesting?
Yeah. So, you know, that's obviously where the rubber meets the road. And I think we have to have an understanding of what health is, a definition of health. Mm. A definition of what a person is, and then a definition of what disease is, and then certainly what the role of the physician is in terms of addressing and trying to restore the health or the wholeness of the patient. And really, I've asked that question to many medical students, residents, interns, staff physicians. I get very incoherent answers. I get very, very stumbling answers. But that's not a critique in terms of being overly judgmental, but it's a reality is that I never really delved into these questions until just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm now 60 years old. I've been practicing medicine for decades and never really thought about some of these more fundamental questions and the definitions. And when we look at speech and debate, particularly debate, we almost always start off with the resolution after a catchy introduction, but we always define our terms, and we don't do that in medicine very well at all. And so really we have to go back to what is a human, and we go into that in our article. And I've really become a huge, huge fan of the biopsychosocial spiritual model of what a human is. Certainly that builds on George Engel's work of the biopsychosocial model, which I keep asking medical students, do they still teach that? Because if not, they really should. But then Daniel Sulmasy and several others brought in the spiritual aspect. And that is like the key game changer for me, is that I now look at all my interactions through the biopsychosocial spiritual model, okay? And so the health of the patient is trying to bring those four dimensions, which are all interrelated, okay? And they should be in balance and in harmony, okay? Those balance and harmony things, as we start looking at well-being and resiliency literature and all the stuff that physicians, you know, physician heal thyself, there's all sorts of stuff in the literature about trying to combat burnout for physicians. Well, the same thing is happening with our patients in terms of anxiety and stress and a disordered life. So if we can step back and conceptually look at the four dimensions that comprise of a human being, understanding that they're all interrelated and that our goal should be to bring them in all four of those dimensions into balance and all four dimensions working harmoniously with one another. Now, disease ends up becoming where the biologic or the somatic aspect of the human being is outside of normal limits, resulting in a functional impairment. So the little story I always tell folks is like LeBron James. LeBron is obviously outside of normal limits. He can jump way loads higher. He's much taller than I am, but it doesn't result in a functional impairment for him. In fact, if anything, it actually works to his advantage. Sure. So again, when we talk about disease, we're looking at biology that's outside of normal limits. And we physicians understand that very clearly. Every time you look at a laboratory analysis, a CBC or a chem panel, there's a normal limit. You know, there's a normal range of motion that the elbow or the shoulder should have. And then, of course, if it results then when the patient's complaining about something, it's usually because it's resulting in some sort of functional impairment. So when we look at our biologic means of actually treating disease, okay, we need to also understand that our treatments, our biologic treatments, are going to be best in the dimension that they're targeted for, which is the biologic dimension, okay? But as a physician, and I, like I said, I'm a radiologist. I'm a guy in a dark room. I'm thinking these things up. I was a flight surgeon for about 8 or 9 years in the Air Force.
Thank you for that service, Chris.
Oh, amen. And so I did a transitional year internship. So I'm not completely divorced from the whole clinical care setting. So, but I think I've got a little bit of conceptual distance where I can maybe make some helpful insights. But when we look at the four dimensions and the patient presents to us, we have to ask ourselves, which dimension of these four seems to be the predominant dimension that's going wrong? Knowing that since we're all interrelated, that psychological, social, and spiritual problems can actually adverse the biology of our humanity as well. And so we just have to, as physicians, we have to use practical wisdom. And that sometimes takes time, knowing our patients. And unfortunately, with a lot of the electronic medical records and the shortened appointment times, it unfortunately decreases our abilities to really know our patients, to then have better insight and wisdom as to where exactly the dimension's going wrong, and then to go ahead and make good, judicious and wise recommendations for which therapy or therapies might be the best for this patient. But what ends up happening in our consumer and economically efficient culture is that, you know, we're looking at throughput, we're looking at RVU generation, things of that nature. So we pinch down on the interaction that we're having with our patients, much to the neglect of those other three dimensions. And so we end up defaulting to the biologic cures, right? So the patient, you know, is asking for something, we just give it to them. Oh, you have a sore throat, here are some antibiotics, or you feel like you need something X. And so we start reflexively almost becoming into that vendor customer model, that provider of services model that Farr Curlin and Chris Tollefson so eloquently write in their book, The Way of Medicine. Highly recommended, by the way. I give out copies of that to everybody who has some interest.
We do too. I want to ask you, Chris, is health in your mind the opposite of disease? And I know that you, in your article, point out, as many others do, that in 1948, there was this redefinition of what health is. But when I compare it to the biopsychosocial model that you've just been explaining to us, it seems to me that that was opening the window of understanding that it's not just the biological, it's not just the physical in terms of health. So what was so wrong with doing that? Is it not an issue of lack of balance, I guess is my question.
So that's a great question there, Mike. And really, I think health ends up becoming the fundamental, you know, infrastructure foundation, basically, trying to get those four dimensions in balance and harmony working with one another. The difficulty is where they introduced a new term called well-being. Well-being in and of itself is perfectly fine. I mean, you know, we should all be in everything that we do in our culture.
Yeah,
we have a center
for well-being.
For well-being. There you go. Yeah. I mean, and it's not just the purview of medical professionals, right? But it's of pastors and counselors and economists and the trash pickup service people. I mean, it's all about promoting well-being and in the sense of human flourishing. The difficulty is when well-being became this more comprehensive concept that kind of went beyond and sort of inferred that now medicine could then start promoting this overall very, very global understanding of well-being. That in and of itself would not necessarily have been all that detrimental if we had, as a culture and as a society, a well-grounded understanding of what human flourishing was. But the problem has subsequently gone in terms of where expressive individualism is now working towards a completely subjective understanding of well-being, okay? So when you divorce it from any sort of objective reality, any sort of social constraints or any sort of wisdom throughout the centuries or the millennia, then subjective well-being, as the patient understands it, is open to any sort of interpretation. So even if the patient is doing something that we know and many others ostensibly would know and understand to be wrong and unhealthy for them and detrimental for their psychological, social, and spiritual well-being, since well-being is now, because of expressive individualism, so very, very subjective, okay, they can go ahead and then ask for something. And then we have to then reflexively go ahead and acknowledge that, okay? Now, that in and of itself doesn't actually necessarily mandate physicians to do things for patients. It just validates the sense that, yes, this patient wants this and that we have to go ahead and honor it. But then the rise of autonomy, or is what Farr and Chris Tollefson would describe as radical autonomy,
yes,
where the patient now is in the driver's seat. The patient makes the diagnosis, the patient makes the demands for healthcare, okay, some sort of services to be provided, and then the physician is mandated to go ahead and do that. But the thing is that it now becomes a very inconsistent model in medicine, because the patient could come to me and I have they have a sore throat, they want antibiotics, but we say, hey, we did the culture, you know, you don't have strep, you know, it's not indicated. Clinical pathway guidelines indicate that that's not required or you know, indicated in your clinical instance. But then many of these other things that the society has deemed to be now necessary, whether they be abortion or physician-assisted suicide, euthanasia, cosmetic surgeries, and particularly all the whole issue with transgender sort of therapies and hormonal contraceptives as well, end up becoming something that's driven entirely and exclusively by the patient for ends that have nothing to do with the objective health of the patient, but they're pursuing other goals, psychosocial goals or things like that. And usually when we do medical procedures or we give things to patients who are otherwise normally healthy, we can only then start running the risks of harming them, either through side effects or surgical complications and things of that nature. And when you look at the dimension-specific model, okay, is that, you know, we use biologic treatments to treat predominantly biologic problems. You know, if a person shows up and they're excessively doing too many jobs, they're stressed out at home and things like that, and they come to us because they're feeling anxious and irritable all the time, you just don't put them on Xanax for the rest of their lives. You want to address the underlying problems, the social problems or the psychologic problems. And so that's what ends up happening with this whole health issues, is that we're starting to use the wrong treatments for the wrong dimension. So essentially, if it's a social problem, it predominantly needs a social solution. Psychologic problems need predominantly psychologic solutions. And then as well, we have to always understand the spiritual aspect of our humanity. And that's the thing that I've really been really excited about lately, is really reintroducing. I mean, there's like a renaissance of literature out there that's acknowledging the importance of prayer and meditation and the spiritual aspect of our humanity and how that actually is an essential part and actually empowers us to do good things in the social, to love our neighbor as ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. And then to go ahead and improve our psychologic understanding in terms of decreasing anxiety, stress, and depression. And of course, when you reduce all that chronic stress, that cannot but have wonderful effects on the biology. Many of our biologic problems, basically, that physicians are continually and habitually having to treat, undoubtedly have some root causes or heavy contributors from an imbalanced understanding of the patient's humanity. And a restoration of that balance, and particularly a reintroduction or a renaissance or an awakening of the spiritual dimension, would go long ways to actually help reduce the depression and the anxiety that many of our patients are experiencing, not to mention ourselves as physicians.
Dr. Lasanti, thank you for joining us today and for stimulating our listeners to think philosophically about some very basic questions. And those of us who work with students and residents who are coming up and trying to climb that mountain to become healthcare professionals with white coats, these are more important questions than ever. Would you not agree?
I agree wholeheartedly, Mike, and thank you and doing the Lord's work at CMDA. I'm a big fan, love the podcast, listen to it every week, and let's just continue on. Let's be encouraged, because the truth is on our side and the Lord is on our side, and we just need to continue, like I said, to speak the truth and love to all those, and you know, they will know us as Christians for our love one for another. Again, if we love medicine and we love our patients, we're going to receive such a great blessing. And again, that's my encouragement and prayer for both you and for everyone who's listening to the podcast today. Thank you very much for having me on. It's been a real honor.
Great challenge. Thank you, Dr. Lasanti.
You're welcome.
Well, some of Chris's final comments reminded me that one of our chief objectives in our strategic plan right now is to equip loving messengers of truth. I'm so glad that Chris joined me for this important conversation about consumer medicine and its pitfalls. If you'd like to read Chris's article entitled Consumer Medicine's Origins and Harms, it was actually published back in December 2021 in the Linacre Quarterly, which is a publication of the Catholic Medical Association. Throughout my conversation with Dr. Lasanti, you heard us mention Dr. Farr Kirlin's book, The Way of Medicine, which Dr. Kirlin co-wrote with Dr. Christopher Tollefson at Duke. You might recall that Dr. Kirtland was my guest on CMDA Matters back in August of 2021. In this book, they ask basic but most important questions. What is medicine and what is it for? What does it mean to be a good doctor? You know, answer to these questions are essential both to the practice of medicine and to our understanding the moral norms that shape that practice. The way of medicine articulates as well as defends an account of medicine and medical ethics that's meant to challenge the reigning provider of services model, as it's called, in which clinicians eschew any claim to know what is good for a patient and instead offer an array of healthcare services for the sake of patients' subjective well-being. Kirtland and Tollefson call for practitioners to recover what they call the way of medicine, which offers us as physicians both a path out of the provider of services model and also the moral resources necessary to resist various political or institutional and cultural forces that are constantly pushing us and our patients into thinking of our relationship in terms of an economic exchange, if you will. You can purchase your copy of The Way of Medicine today in our CMDA bookstore simply by going to cmda.org/bookstore. Another book that adds even more to this discussion is The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self by Dr. Carl Truman. He was my guest on the podcast last year, and I am delighted to tell you that he agreed to be a plenary speaker in a couple of weeks at our 2022 CMDA National Convention, April 21st through the 24th in Indianapolis, Indiana. In his book, Dr. Truman analyzes the development of the sexual revolution as a symptom rather than the cause of the human search for identity. Truman surveys the past, brings clarity to the present, and gives guidance for the future as we as Christians navigate the culture in humanity's ever-changing quest for identity. You'll find his book as well in our CMDA bookstore. Again, cmda.org/bookstore. If you'd like to hear Dr. Truman speak at the convention in the middle of April, be sure to register. But I have to tell you, some good news is that we are completely booked. We have no more registrations available for on-site attendance, but we are offering a virtual option. You'll have access to all plenary and breakout sessions live, and you'll be able to live chat with other virtual attendees. Just visit natcon.cmda.org for more information and to register to attend virtually today. Near the beginning of our discussion, you briefly heard Dr. Lasanti talk about how he got involved with his local pregnancy center. He saw the need and how he could make a difference for patients by using his radiology training. It's a powerful testimony for how God can use each and every one of us in our own unique way within the public square. Maybe, listener, God has gifted you with the skills to join a team at a pregnancy resource center, just like Chris. Or maybe he's opened the door for you to testify at your state legislature against assisted suicide, for example. If you haven't yet engaged with CMDA's advocacy efforts at the state or federal level, would you take a few moments today and prayerfully consider if God might be calling you to join in our efforts? On the state level, we are heavily engaged in fighting to protect life and care for the unborn, as well as those who are nearing the end of their lives. And friends, we are seeing some real fruit. Florida passed a 15-week abortion ban, while the state of Ohio passed a bill that establishes civil and criminal penalties for failing to protect the health or the life of a child born alive after an attempted abortion. And yet, we still face trials, as New Jersey recently passed a most radical abortion law allowing non-physicians to perform abortions. We're also advocating to ensure chemical abortion safety protocols. Regarding assisted suicide, the state of Virginia and Washington state defeated attempts to legalize or expand assisted suicide this very year. Please pray for our efforts in many other states. On the federal side of public policy, we're tracking several bills, including U.S. Senate Bill 393, the dubiously named Equality Act, which would pressure healthcare professionals like you to provide gender-affirming treatments and/or surgeries to children who struggle with gender identity issues or full-blown gender dysphoria. We're also closely monitoring and challenging other regulations that do not protect or promote Hippocratic tradition and values, regulations that would affect your daily life as a healthcare professional. We've made it a top priority to collaborate with national like-minded advocacy groups like the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs or the Catholic Medical Association, the Coptic Medical Association, and several others. Together, we are continuously at work to positively impact national public policy. As Christians, we have a responsibility from our Lord Jesus to be defenders of our faith in the public square. If you'd like to get more involved with CMDA's advocacy efforts on either the state or the federal level, please contact communications@cmda.org. Our staff would love to hear from you and find a place for you to make a difference. Just one more thing about advocacy. CMDA is increasingly called on by the national media to give perspective on ethical issues that are triggered by changing medical technology. From congressional testimony to network television, God continues to open doors for CMDA to amplify the voice of Christian healthcare professionals on the critical life issues of our day. If you're interested, I want to encourage you to attend our upcoming Voice of Christian Doctors Media Training, August 12th and 13th, 2022. This two-day training is designed to teach you how to use the media as an educational tool and to sharpen skills as a CMDA media representative. We will use real-life examples to share a proven methodology that works even in the most hostile situations. And you know, we will explore how advocacy and media work hand in hand together and how to prepare to use your media skills to testify in your own state legislature. Participation for each of these trainings is limited to 12 attendees so that we might provide one-on-one training. So visit cmda.org/events now to reserve your space. If you're interested in Dr. Truman's classic book that I briefly mentioned a few moments ago, be sure to join me next week as my guest is none other than Dr. Carl Truman. He's joining us to give us just a small preview of what he'll be sharing with us at the convention this year, and I can't wait for you to hear what he has to say to us. As we close our episode today, I wanted to share this comment that came recently from a medical student at the University of Michigan. That student said, "CMDA has encouraged me by providing me strong relationships with physician mentors and medical student peers who share the same values and approach toward life that I do. I have appreciated the meaningful Christian community that CMDA offers." Well, as you connect with CMDA through the podcast each week, through the emails that we send you, through the magazine we send out, through your local community ministries, and so, so much more that CMDA offers, I hope that you are developing strong relationships with others in your healthcare community, people just like Dr. Chris Lasanti, who share the same values as you do. And as you develop these relationships and this community of believers around you, I believe the Lord will use that to help you bring the hope and healing of Christ to our world through healthcare. That's what matters to CMDA, and CMDA matters. Bye for now.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.